From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 15th day of May, 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises. He's out of Mandeville, Louisiana. We'll hear all about the political support that's been building in Washington, D.C. for biodiesel. That's diesel made from soybeans for the most part. And we'll discuss the weather forecast today, too, that with Mike Tenora at T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. It all happens during this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org.
Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC, providing nationwide land auctions, farmland sales and management, and financial advice for agribusiness. Information on upcoming land auctions and offerings can be found at murraywiseassociates.com.
Let's check now the finishing numbers in Chicago from the CME Group. For July futures settled in the wheat pit at $6.78 and a quarter, down 12 cents. September at $6.87, also down 12. And the hard red July at $7.78 and three quarters, 27 and a half cents lower. Corn futures down 11 and a quarter cents at $4.84 and a quarter. September at $4.81, 9 and three quarters lower. December at $4.80 and a half, down 8 and a half. The March at 488 and a half, 8 and a half lower, and the May corn at 494 and a quarter, down 8 and three quarters for next year. July of 2015 at $4.99 and a half, 8 and three quarters lower. July beans 16 and a half cents lower, $14.70 and a quarter, the settlement price. August at $14.03 and three quarters, down 14 and a quarter. September at $12.73, down 3 and a quarter, and November beans at $12.17 and three quarters, 4 and three quarters lower. January futures 12.23 and three quarters, down a nickel, and July of next year at 12.35, down 7 cents. Bean meal at $4.81.40, $5.10 lower. Bean oil at $41.04, finished 34 cents lower. Live cattle futures on the afternoon in the June contract 137.40, a nickel lower. August at $137.82 and a half cents, down 57 and a half cents in the live cattle. May feeders at 186.15, up 75, and the August at 192.42 and a half, 2 and a half cents lower. September feeder cattle, by the way, at 193.55, were up a dime. June lean hogs, $119.42 and a half cents per 100 pounds, down $1.15. July at 125.35, finished $1.55 lower. You, of course, are listening to Illinois Public Media. This is the Closing Market Report. You can always find all of our agricultural programming anytime you'd like, on demand, to listen to in its entirety on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, June contract, $101.48 a barrel, down 89 cents. June gasoline, the wholesale price on the RBOB at 295 and 8 tenths, a penny lower. Ethanol futures at 217 and 6 tenths, up 1 and 4 tenths, and the spread between the two is 78 and 2 tenths of a cent wide. That's 2 and 4 tenths of a cent narrower than it was yesterday. Natural gas at $4.45 and a tenth, up 8 and 4 tenths, and diesel fuel for the day at $2.94 and 8 tenths of a cent, down a penny and 4 tenths. Gold futures $1,293.60 an ounce, down $12.30, and the dollar now at 80, even, down 0.06. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. A 50% chance of showers. It'll be cloudy throughout the afternoon, a high of just 55 degrees on a north-northwest wind at about 13 miles an hour. That will gust to 16, and then tonight, showers likely. Those will come mainly after 2 in the morning. Cloudy in the area, low of 40 degrees, north winds at 6 to 8. They'll turn to the southeast after midnight. Chance of rainfall this evening set at 60%, and then tomorrow showers are likely. That'll come before 2 in the afternoon central time. Mostly cloudy and a high of 53 degrees on an east wind at 7 to 9 miles an hour. Chance of rainfall set at 60%. Friday night, a 50% chance of showers before 8, mostly cloudy and 37. Sunny skies on Saturday with a 60-degree high. Saturday evening, partly cloudy and 41, up to 67. On Sunday with a sunny sky, Sunday night down to 47 and clear. Monday, sunny and 71. Monday night, cloudy and 54. And Tuesday, sunny skies and 75 degrees. By the time we get to Tuesday evening, 57 and cloudy. And Wednesday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms again, although it'll probably be partly sunny with a high of 80. More on the weather at the top of the hour. on the phone line now to take a look at what's been happening in the world of the agricultural markets here at the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this 15th day of May 2014 is Dan Zwicker. He's at CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
It's been cool and wet, and farmers have not been in the field, but today Chicago decided it should go lower. And I think it may have been led down by corn, but possibly wheat. What do your feelers tell you?
Well, corn and wheat go together. And wheat's been breaking. Both corn's been breaking. I think basically where we're at in the market, this is kind of the time of year, about the middle part of May, when the trade kind of looks around and see how planting has gone, at least up to this point. They kind of look at what the weather forecasts are, and then they kind of decide whether or not the crop's going to get planted or it's not going to get planted. And in this case, with the weather forecasts not showing any really extreme situation for the next 30 days or 90 days, and the technical breakdown that basically began to occur after USDA's crop report, it just kind of went into a meltdown mode here today, and both corn and wheat went sharply lower with it. Now, soybeans, I think, are probably in a little better shape fundamentally, but that downdraft in both corn and soybeans, or corn and wheat, was enough to just go ahead and pull the old crop soybeans down with it also.
So what are your support levels? It looks to me like corn might be touching one of those or really close in the lead option July, and it is now the lead because the May contracts all expired this week.
Well, when you look at the July contract, the first major support point, other than the 23, and that kind of gave away yesterday, was a 38% retracement of the winter-spring type rally. That came into play here at 85. We did dip below it a little bit, but we managed to close within 0.75 cents of it. So I still think that is a spot here for the July contract to maybe try to stabilize. We'll have to see what kind of follow-through we get today and tomorrow. But if that doesn't hold, then you've got awfully good support sitting right in this 475 to 473 area. 476 is going to be 38% retracement on the lead futures contract. And 473 is going to be about a 50% retracement point on the individual July contract. So I do think if the areas that we reached here today don't begin to find some support here in the overnight and the early trading tomorrow, then we would probably slip down, you know, into that mid-70s on the July contract.
Much in the way of fear for either the July or December, both, and I think this may be the case, but you'll have to tell me for sure that people will begin to see a head and shoulders top in each of those charts on the weekly?
Well, you could probably read a head and shoulders, but I think for the most part, what people are kind of going to view is more of a double top type formation probably in the weekly corn chart. And then since we sliced through the April low, that is probably one of the more negative features probably in the corn chart, is that when we slice through the April low, is not going to look good on a monthly chart. And that kind of and actually it hit a lot of sell signals here on the way down here. So most of your fun crowd that's watching some of these technicals, they started bailing yesterday, and we did see some more bailing here today. But we'll have to kind of see where we're at tomorrow. We've done an awful lot of decline in here for 1 week, basically since the crop's really not totally in the ground yet, and we still have some worries yet in the northern areas, but they do have a window here to plant and try to get caught up. before the heavy rains come in, and there are areas early next week. But there's no doubt about it that the corn chart has done some technical damage, at least for the time being, and one now has to probably view that we're in a corrective decline from that winter-spring advance. The only question here now is where do we stabilize, and then before we get ready for the next leg up.
Okay, so a couple of things you have said tell me that you're not willing to give up the upside potential. One, you said it's a corrective decline. The other, you talked about a double top, and I do seem to recall you believe double tops are made to be broken. So are you still feeling confident or at least of the idea that this market may have upside potential in it yet?
I think longer term here there is some upside in it, but I do have to acknowledge, when we got generally friendly news, as far as I considered it friendly news in last week's crop report, the market reversed down, and we basically haven't looked back. That is a very strong signal that at least the general attitude of the market is that wasn't enough to keep the spring rally going, and now we're looking at basically, a fairly active planting pace last week. We caught up to average. Once we get to this point, the trade kind of assumes that we're going to go ahead and get the crop planted, and that's what's being reflected in the market. I think Monday's number is going to be real important to see how far along those northern areas that were far behind, how much progress they've made. Because then we're going to be getting into the, and depending upon what kind of weather they get early next week, then we're going to be getting into a kind of a nail biter of whether or not all those acres will get planted, or they'll start triggering that prevent plant date, which is like May 25th or so.
And so I suppose really what you're trying to tell me is that the trade is making the switch from old crop leading to new crop leading at this point. Is that right for corn?
And I think that's the case, and I think they're probably maybe jumping the conclusion a little too quick, because there is USA did recognize the demand factor in old crop corn by bumping up exports to 1.9. The carryout is 1150 or thereabouts.
Mm-hmm.
And for all practicality, if you look at another way of looking at trend line yields, where this 165 that USDA is using is probably out of reach, and something more like 160 to 161 is more realistic. And then if you put a stronger, a higher demand factor in the balance sheet for the 14-15, we're really not going to build stocks like USDA's report implied, unless we just have a real perfect summer.
Yeah, so you're thinking, what, 1.4, 1.5 instead of 1.7 for carryout?
Yeah, I think basically if we do raise ending stocks any in the coming year, it's going to be, 100 or 100 or a couple hundred million. It's not going to be nothing like the 1.7
mm-hmm.
That the USDA number basically or balance sheet reflects.
On that note, I'll let you go. Thanks so much.
Very well.
That's Dan Zwicker. He's at CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
This broadcast comes to you from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Up next, support for biodiesel made from soybeans is coming to a head in Washington, D.C., where farmers, politicians, and biodiesel producers gathered yesterday to ask for continued support in two forms of the renewable fuel. There are two pieces to the development of the biodiesel energy segment. The first is the $1 per gallon tax incentive. Democratic senators from North Dakota, Minnesota, Indiana, Washington, and Illinois are hopeful it will be retroactively reinstated for 2013 and put in place for 2014 as part of the tax extenders package now under discussion in Congress. However, it may be important to note that the some 200 biodiesel plants around the nation produced nearly 1.8 billion gallons of the advanced biofuel last year without the aid of the incentive. Well, that's because the incentive expired, says Ann Steckel.
This is the third time it's expired in the last 5 years, so clearly federal policy has been very uncertain for our industry. But despite all of that, we did have a record year of production.
Steckel is vice president for federal affairs at the National Biodiesel Board. Again, 2013 was a record year for biodiesel production. However, it was only operated at about two-thirds capacity, which, and this is the second important point, is close to double the federal biomass-based diesel requirement under the original Renewable Fuel Standard, or RFS. So, biodiesel production in the United States last year was greater than required by the federal law mandating renewable fuels be used. That's the RFS implemented by US EPA, and it did that without the aid of a tax incentive. Still, Democratic senators stood in support of both the tax incentive and an increase in the biomass-based diesel portion of the RFS. Well, Illinois' senior senator Dick Durbin says it's because the fuel is clean, homegrown, and creates jobs.
This industry creates real good-paying jobs. Five different biofuels processing facilities in my state and more than 5,000 people with associated employment. When there's uncertainty about the future of biofuels, there's uncertainty about these jobs. And I care about that like every other senator who's gathered here today. So first and foremost, let's take care of the tax credit part of this. Let's get the extender bill done, which includes this biofuel tax credit. And secondly, beyond the biofuel tax credit, let's make sure that we continue to plead our case with the EPA.
US EPA will, in June, release the Federal Renewable Fuels Standard. It, as proposed, would set the bio-based diesel requirement at 1.28 billion gallons. The industry, the Biodiesel Board, and some senators would like that number to be closer to 1.8 billion gallons. They'd like to protect the industry, the jobs, and, they say, the environment.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
It's a Thursday afternoon. You're listening to Illinois Public Media. In this encore edition of Backyard Industry, Lisa Brultz explores a growing trend between food and cell phones.
About 5 years ago, many of us started hearing a sound at the dinner table we'd rarely, if ever, heard before. Cameras. The advent of smartphones, one of which is responsible for that cute shutter sound you just heard, ushered in an era, still going strong, where people can photograph anything, anywhere. And not only that, they can share these photographs directly with other people via email, text message, and social media, sites like Facebook and Twitter, or, more recently, Instagram, which is specifically for photo sharing. And while people still enjoy taking and sharing photos of their family and friends and landmarks and flowers and stuff like that, what they seem to enjoy most is taking photos of food in all its states, from raw to cooked to consumed. Hey, I'm guilty. I've gone to a few special dinners and taken out my phone as each course was brought out to capture the food as I was seeing it right then, in that moment. I've photographed eggs in a boiling water bath as I was poaching them, food caught in the act of cooking. I've taken photos of food in the perfect early light of a humid summer morning at farmers markets with both a fancy camera and my phone's camera. And I admit to enhancing some of these images on my computer, and I've even posted the results on websites and social media. I've done these things. But then I started hearing about restaurants banning patrons from taking photos of food while they were dining. Not locally, thankfully. But in all seriousness, there's a bit of a backlash against food photo enthusiasts who like to document their food that seems to be getting stronger. This is Justine Bersoni.
I'd much rather look at photos of a menu and go from there than to read a description.
She's a professional photographer who likes taking photos of food with her phone and her fancy camera. I asked her about what I'd read about restaurants forbidding any kind of photography while people were eating.
I mean, I kind of understand how a chef might be offended by someone pulling out their iPhone to take a less than quality picture of what they consider to be a high quality meal that they've presented in a particular way, which then they have no control over of what that image is going to be that this person puts out on Facebook. But I still think that's kind of nonsense.
So while she likes taking photos of food in restaurants and outside them, She also enjoys looking at other people's photos of food, especially if they include visuals like a cooking technique or the inside of someone's kitchen or a visit to a farm. And when she's in a restaurant, it's a sensory thing in the way that a photo of a favorite beach or cityscape can help her remember a food experience more deeply.
There's something about, and I know that the couple that you had interviewed most recently said you eat with your eyes. And it's true. I do. When I pull out the camera first and the food is hot and it's been put in front of me at the table, I'll get looks sometimes like, you should just eat your food, like put the camera down, it's hot, you know, start eating. I'm like, I've already started eating, like you can physically start eating. I'm one step ahead of you.
So, okay, there's the aesthetics of food in photos, but there's also the concept of crowdsourcing a sense of place, of using the photos as part of a field guide. The best field guides, in my opinion, feature photos. Viewers or readers can learn a lot about a place, a restaurant, yes, but also a locale, by seeing photos of the food that can be found there, whether it's something still on the vine or prepared in a home kitchen or made in an eating establishment. Maybe it's an empty plate. In any event, they're not illustrations. They're not words. They're images captured by people who had an experience and wanted to document it before they ate it and it disappeared forever. For In My Backyard, this is Lisa Braltz.
Support comes from Common Ground Food Co-op in downtown Urbana. For the spring season, Common Ground has gardening supplies and hundreds of varieties of organic and heirloom seeds ready for planting. Common Ground is a full-service grocery store that supports local farms year-round. More information is at commonground.coop. And from the Black Dog Smoke and Ale House, serving barbecue beef brisket, pork shoulder, ribs, chicken, and more, slow-cooked over a wood-fired smoker. Open Sunday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m., and Friday and Saturday, 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. The Black Dog, 201 North Broadway in downtown Urbana.
This is the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Matt Bennett from TGM on the phone line in Windsor, Illinois at the elevator. Matt, thanks for taking the time with us. Yesterday, when we talked with the folks at the Andersons, they said, the marketplace is now just waiting for farmers to have to move grain rather than looking for grain. Is that right on your end?
Well, I think in some parts, but we've had some pushes still up until the last few days. We've had some corn that we've had sold out of our facility that was actually bought FOB. So the purchaser was, hauling it themselves, and they've been sending us 40 to 50 trucks per day. So I think they're needing the corn.
Somebody needs corn if they need that many trucks. That's
yes.
For darn sure. So how do your bids look for the day?
Well, our bids, we're looking at 1600 on cash and 468 and then 452 for fall corn, beans 1481 and then 1193. I mean, I think basis with this break is probably going to stay steady, if not maybe improve a little bit, but that's just my opinion.
You think farmers will get everything in? Weather looks like it's participating with them pretty well so far.
It's interesting. There's guys running in North Dakota today, I see, and, there's some guys in areas that haven't been able to in the upper Midwest run a little bit, so that's going to help them some. We're saturated here, but we have corn up and the beans that were planted up and looking good, so, we don't have a whole lot of complaints, really.
Not many complaints, and probably only beans left to put in, I suspect.
Yes, it's pretty much predominantly just beans in our area to put in still.
Hey, thanks much. We'll talk with you again in a week.
Have a good one.
Matt Bennett is with TGM. He's out of Windsor, Illinois. You can hear him again if you'd like on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. This program does come to you from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Back in 2 minutes.
It's St. Isidore the Farmer Day, patron of agricultural workers, livestock, and ranchers. On this day in agricultural history in 1803, Sir Arthur Thomas Cotton was born. A British engineer, his life work was constructing irrigation and dams for water shortages in southern India, saving thousands from famine and promoting the local economy. Cotton also founded the Indian School of Hydraulic Engineering. In 1858, Robert Hare died, an American chemist. He devised the first oxyhydrogen blowpipe, the ancestor of the modern welding torch. Hare's blowpipe could melt sizable quantities of platinum. and largely on the strength of his invention, Hare was awarded honorary degrees from both Yale and Harvard. In 1923, Listerine was registered as a trademark. Before it was a mouthwash, it was a surgical antiseptic, and its name comes from Dr. Joseph Lister, a pioneer of antiseptic surgery. In 1940, nylon stockings went on sale for the first time in the U.S. in Wilmington, Delaware. 4 million pair were sold in several hours. And in 1989, Hershey reduced the size of its chocolate bar to 1.55 ounces. The price remained 40 cents. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. Mike Tenora at T-Storm Weather in Chicago is on the line with us today. Hi, Mike. How are you?
Good, Todd. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing very, very well, though it's still wet here in our part of the world, and it looks like it'll stay kind of cool and maybe a little bit of drizzle around. What do you see over the next couple of days, and how quickly might we be able to dry out the Midwest?
Well, you're right. We do have some showers out there today, and we will see those continue across the eastern half of the Corn Belt, not only through tonight, but into portions of tomorrow as well. Temperatures also stay fairly cool over the next several days. So we don't have a really great scenario for the moment. It will be cool. It will be a little bit showery. And that pretty much lasts through the next 1 to 2 days. Now, we do have some changes that take place this weekend and more so early next week across Illinois. Out in the desert southwest, there's been a very hot area of upper-level high pressure. That expands from Sunday through Monday and eventually envelops all of the central U.S. as we move into the middle portions of next week. So for Illinois, that means we'll see a sharp warming trend beginning Monday and then continuing through the middle of next week. We think the temperatures next week will be considerably warmer than what we've seen over the last couple of days, with high temperatures in the 70s and the 80s. You can even make an argument for 90-degree readings at one point or another within next week, though the highest chance for temperatures that warm are further to the west across Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, and into Missouri as well. So a lot warmer. Now, we don't have a whole lot of rain out there for the first half of next week. There is a small chance that we should mention Sunday night and Monday, but the better chances are definitely further to the north across the Dakotas into Iowa and parts of Wisconsin. So we think that we'll start to see improving conditions for planting across the southern half to two-thirds of the Corn Belt, including Illinois, later on next week.
When you look around the globe, are there any other places that you have been watching closely that either are doing really well or give you some grave concern?
We don't really have a whole lot happening worldwide right now, which is generally good because that means we don't have a whole lot of problem areas that we can see. The one thing that we are following is what's happening in Australia right now. It has turned sharply drier over the last week, but prior to this week, it was very wet. So wheat planting, which is taking place now in Australia, is looking really great. We had a lot of rain earlier in their winter. Now it's dry, so planting should be taking place fairly quickly. The only thing we have to follow is that an El Nino appears to be developing across the world. If that happens, Australia oftentimes stays dry, not only for the next couple of months, but all the way through the end of the year. If that were to take place, we'd have to keep a close eye on their winter wheat crop But at this moment, we don't have a whole lot of concern.
Thank you so much for taking the time with us, and we look forward to talking with you again next week, Mike.
Sounds great. Have a good one.
You too. Mike Tenores with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois, joins us here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. You have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.